Our subject this morning is faith. I want to spend just a couple of minutes to finish up from last week on forgiveness, but we'll spend most of our time this morning talking about faith. Last week, I just wanted to make the final point about forgiveness, and that is, if we forgive others, we will be forgiven by God. If we don't forgive others, God's not going to forgive us. He states that very plainly in Matthew. Christ says that in Matthew 6, verses 14 and 15. And how are we to forgive? We're to forgive completely and every time.
As Christ forgave you.
Yeah, we're to forgive as Christ forgives us. And have any of us become perfect and never sin? I think the answer to that, everybody would say, would be no. But Christ will still forgive us, won't He? So we are to forgive our brother. In Matthew 18, 21 and 22 is where the disciples asked, I think it was Peter. Peter, verse 21. Peter came to him and said, "Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times?" Jesus said to him, "I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven." Need knowing that. And we are to forgive from the heart. Matthew 18 and 35. And this was after Christ told the parable about the servant that owed a great debt to his master, a huge debt. And the master said, "It's time to pay up." And he says, "Well, I don't have it." And he says, "Well, I'm going to throw you in prison." And so the servant fell down and begged him, said, "Have compassion on me and I will pay you." And so the master did. But then that servant had a very small debt owed to him. I think it was one or two denarii, which was about a day's wages. 100 denarii, which is about a day's wage. Somebody owed him that. And he went and took him by the throat and said, "You pay me right now what you owe me." And he says, "Well, I don't have it. Have mercy." And he says, "Well, I'm not." And threw him into prison. And so Christ says in verse 35... or verse 34, "So the main master was angry and delivered that servant, that middle servant, to the torturers until he should pay all that was due to him." And so Christ says our Heavenly Father is going to do the same thing to each one of us if we don't forgive from the heart. Do we have any more handouts left over? Gwen needs one. So the punishment... our punishment will be very severe, just as this master delivered to his servant. Any other thoughts on forgiveness? Anything you had from last week that you didn't, that you wanted to talk about?
One that I didn't see on there, and I guess it would be a little bit debatable, is forgiving ourselves. You know, there's a lot of people that struggle, I think, with whenever they've come to the Lord and asked for forgiveness, but yet they have a hard time themselves of moving on and still living in some of that grief or...
letting go of the guilt.
Yeah. Yeah. So there may be a one on there is forgiving ourselves.
Yeah. And the verse, the passage I think about that, when I think about that, is where Jesus says, "My yoke is easy and my burden is light." You know, when we can't deal with things... whether it's grief or guilt, or you know, maybe it's something that we haven't done wrong. It's just grief over something, and we can't deal with it. We just have to give it to Christ, give it to God, and He'll take care of it. Okay, if there's nothing else then on that, let's move on today. Our subject is faith and the increase of it. The more that I studied on this, the more that I saw that it was about faith is about growing. And it's not just about having faith. It's not just about works, but it's about increasing your faith. Faith is not something that you get when you come up out of the waters of baptism. Hopefully we all had faith of some degree when we were converted, when we understood we needed to be saved and we made the confession that Jesus is the Son of God. That's a statement of faith there. But when we look at the overall subject of faith in our Christian life, it's very small when we first become a child of God, I think. And we're going to see Jesus made that comparison at least twice. And it's all about growing it, Dwayne.
Yeah, you probably, many of you got this in your notes or anything to say, but, faith is like growth of the human body.
Yeah.
You're either growing or you're dying.
Yeah.
That's how we are through life. We start out as a young guy and we grow until we get to a certain point, and then it starts going down the other way. It starts dying. And faith the same way.
Right. And I didn't put this in the notes, but sometimes we look at faith like, I have faith in Christ and I have faith in God, and we think, well, I believe these things. And that is faith, but it's much more than that. Faith is what we do. It's how we live. Well, let's get started on it here, and I think it'll become more clear. We know, Christ performed countless miracles. There's probably only a very few of them recorded for us. But when you look at Matthew, which this whole class has become a lot of it's a study of Matthew because he had so much detail over these teachings, but we see that Christ performed one miracle right after another for people. And although he did do things like feed the 5,000, did that mean that the 5,000 displayed faith before he fed them? No. He did miracles because he had compassion on people. But he also specifically did miracles because the person that was sick or needed help for their relative had great faith. Let's look at Mary and Martha in the book of John. It's interesting. That Lazarus, we know Lazarus fell sick and Jesus was not there, and they sent word to him, come, Lazarus is sick and he's going to die. But Jesus intentionally did not come to Bethany. He let him die. And here we have two sisters. In verse 21, Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Verse 32, then Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, and she fell down and she saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. They said the identical same thing. If you had been here, he wouldn't have died. Okay, then let's drop down to verse 40. Jesus goes to the tomb. Jesus said to Martha, did I not say to you that you would believe if you would see the glory of God? He had told them to roll the stone away, and she says, no, don't do that. He's been dead 4 days. He'll smell. He'll stink. Where was her faith at? She apparently didn't believe that Christ could raise him from the dead, did she? He says, didn't I say to you, you would believe? If you believe, you would see the glory of God. Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and I know that you always hear me, but because of the people who are standing by, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me. And so he raised Lazarus from the dead. So here's Mary and Martha, two women that were very close to Christ, but they were... their faith was small, but don't you think it grew tremendously when they saw Lazarus come out of the grave? Of course it did. And Christ says here, I think that Christ explains it to us here in verse 42. He says, I said this, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. In other words, he prayed openly to God where these people could hear him and see him. And he made a great public display in this instance of Lazarus coming out of the tomb to make believers. So he increased their faith, no doubt.
What do you think, Mike, that Martha and them probably had the same kind of faith that Thomas had? And the fact that Thomas said, you know, unless I see it, I'm not going to believe it. Well, I'm sure Martha and her family had seen Jesus perform miracles where people were sick and better.
Yeah.
But they probably had not seen him.
Probably not. Probably not.
That's why the thought never ever occurred to them.
Yeah.
And
that's what faith is about. It's believing something you haven't seen yet.
Right.
Because if you've seen it, you don't have to have faith, do you? If I saw Jesus do something, then I know he can do it. That's why they said if he'd been here, he wouldn't have died. But I think it's a good point. They probably had not seen him raise anyone from the dead, and so.
Well, they did believe that he would be raised at the last day.
Well, yeah.
He talks about I'm the resurrection of life. So I mean, they did believe that he would raise again. They just didn't think it would be in this life.
But not to a physical body. Right. Yeah. Not in 4 days.
So that really is a good lesson on our faith today. We didn't see Lazarus come out.
Right.
But we can have even greater faith than Mary and Martha because we can read about it, and if we will let our mind accept that, then that makes a tremendous faith.
Yeah, here we are this morning. We can flip back and forth, look at all these stories, and here we've got 6,000 years of history in one book. Well, not 6,000, but 4,000 years of history in one book. And these things happen to them, you know, something would happen and they may not see anything like this happen again for months, for years, or ever. And them trying to keep all these things in their mind, they didn't have communication like we do. They had a scribe, you know, those old men that could write would sit down and copy the law and then they'd read it on the Sabbath. They didn't have a newspaper to keep track of daily events like we do, so we probably could cut them a little bit of slack when we look at things that people did, righteous people or good people, and say, well, how could they do that? It's a lot different time now than it was then. Okay, Matthew, the 8th chapter, Christ, I believe, instilled faith in his disciples when there was a great storm. This was not when Peter walked on the water. This was a different time. Matthew 8:23. Now when he got into a boat, his disciples followed him. No doubt this was the Sea of Galilee. And suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. Now that's got to be big waves. I don't know if you've ever been out on a big lake in big waves or not, but I have a couple times. And it, you know, about the first time one of those big ones crashes over, you start getting real serious about thinking, am I going to go out down or not? And the Sea of Galilee was, if I remember right, about 25 or 26 miles long and about 5 miles across at the widest point. That's a big lake. You know, I mean, easily you can get out there and not see land. So here's these waves as big as a ship or bigger. Then his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. But he said to them, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. So the men marveled, saying, who can this be, that even the winds and the sea obey him? You know, that to me is, I mean, that's as big or on the same parallel as raising someone from the dead. It's just, you know, who can make a storm stop instantly, just like that? No one but God. So you can imagine what must have been going through their minds and how astonished they were. And I think in the account where, I don't know if I've got it in here, where Peter walked on, yeah, where Peter walked on the water, I think it says they feared greatly. And I think all of us would fear greatly too, because of the power that Christ had. And then we think, well, He has this great power, and I'm probably not what I ought to be. What could happen to me? Okay. He healed the centurion's servant because of the great faith that the centurion had. In there in Matthew, the 8th chapter, also verses 5 through 10. I'll just read that quickly. Now, when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to Him pleading with Him, saying, "Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented." And keep in mind, the centurion here was a soldier, a ruler over at least 100 men, and a person of status, a person of, I assume that he was a Roman. I haven't really studied on it much, but I assume that he was a Roman soldier. Now, why would this Roman soldier come to Christ? Well, obviously, he had seen Him do something before. He had probably seen Him heal before. But here's this soldier who had humbled himself to come to this Jew of Nazareth who had people following him. And he says, he pleaded with him, "Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented." And Jesus said to him, "I will come and heal him." Then the centurion answered and said, "Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak a word and my servant will be healed." So that shows his faith there. You don't even have to come, Christ. I don't even want to bother you with coming to my house. I'm not worthy for you to even come into my house. Just say the word. I believe. Verse 10, when Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, "Assuredly, I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." Jesus was impressed with this centurion's faith. So it appears his faith was pretty strong at this point. And so Jesus grants his request. Verse 13, Jesus said to him, "Go your way, and as you have believed, so let it be done for you." And his servant was healed that same hour. So Jesus didn't go to his house. He said, go home. He's healed.
Mike, listening to you go through that, brought up a question about, and I believe you said right. He said, the Lord said, his faith is really strong. What about his knowledge? You know, his knowledge was probably limited. So
oh, yeah.
That indicates that we can have strong faith with limited knowledge.
Sure.
But the more knowledge we get, then we always say the stronger our faith becomes. Well, it should. But I was just thinking about that relationship between knowledge and faith. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Well, that gets into the different definitions of the word faith. The devils believe. You know, they have faith and belief that they're going to be destroyed at the end. They know that they, at least during this time period, they had a time where they were pretty much free to do what they wanted to do with human beings. But they certainly didn't obey, did they? I think that this... as far as I know, the centurion would not have been a Jew and not under the Jewish law, unless someone has information I don't have about him being a Jew. I don't know how he could be a Jew and be a centurion. But in any case, you know, with faith like this, who knows if he was obedient to the... patriarchal law or not, as Cornelius was.
I think it's another aspect of this is faith has different aspects. He had great faith, at least in a particular aspect.
Right.
Whether he had, and I think of faith in, including trust and obedience as well as belief. I mean, whether he trusted the Lord, for instance, whether he was obeying the Lord, he had faith in the sense that he believed.
Yeah. Did he believe that Jesus was actually the Son of God? Well, we're not really told that, are we? You would, common sense would make you think that he probably did, but who knows? You know, there were other miracles that went on during this time period. Maybe he just believed he was a person who could heal, and it stopped there. I don't know, but he had great faith. We know that for sure. Ted?
Centurion, unlike a lot of other people, you know, who follow Jesus around, you know, begging, you know, like the next person we're going to talk about, this woman obviously had faith, but she also thought that she needed to reach out and grab Jesus mm-hmm. and be healed. And this centurion, his faith was so strong, he knew that Jesus was capable of doing whatever Jesus
right.
wanted to do.
Right.
And I think the same thing is true for us as well. Sometimes we get in our head that, well, I have to do this, before God will help me, or I'll give you an example. You know, if we were like having like a financial difficulty or something, well, that's all God needs to know. We don't have to give God ideas on what He needs to do to fix that. For
yeah.
us. And I think that's kind of what the centurion was thinking here. He didn't have to tell Jesus.
You have to come to my house to do this.
Yeah, he didn't have to tell Jesus how to solve the problem.
Right.
He just said, I know you can solve it. Would you do that, please?
All right. Yeah. You know, the Jews, Christ got very aggravated more than once because the Jews always wanted a sign, remember? He says, well, I'm not going to give you a sign. Just believe. You see what I do, just believe that I'm the Son of God. I say that I'm the Son of God, and I prove it by the things I do. Just believe. And, you know, so this today, if, you know, if we take the attitude of, well, I have to see, or I have to know before I believe, that's not faith, is it? Faith is believing that God can accomplish or will accomplish what's needed before we see any sign or we see any indication, even though they are there. And we do see them from time to time, but I think sometimes we get into that mindset maybe that the Jews had of a sign.
I think this is why faith is such an outstanding thing. I mean, without faith it's impossible to please God.
Right.
And I think that's why our degree of faith is what controls how much God does for us. That's not talking anything about His ability or power. He can do anything. But He cannot save us if we don't have faith.
Yeah.
He can, you know, you might want me to come out and fix electric in your house, I'm going to put this another way. I might tell you, Mike, I'll come out and fix electric in your house. But if you think, well, I don't have any faith in Him being able to do that, you're not going to have me do it.
Right.
So I have to have faith in God before it will be effective what He wants me to do.
That's probably why we have so many people that they rely on their own intelligence or their own way of thinking. You know, you mentioned somebody, I think Wayne mentioned about Thomas Jefferson. And I looked that up, trying to find some more information. I never had heard that before. And he tore out some of the pages and kind of wrote his own Bible.
Yeah, he cut out parts with a razor blade, I think is what he did, and made his own New Testament.
Yeah. And the thing that I read about that was that he cut out the parts about these miracles that Jesus did. He thought he just had great morals. He was a great moral teacher. and he liked the morals that he taught, but he didn't want to believe in the miracles and him being the Son of God and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Okay. And we do have the instance here about the woman who touched the hem of his garment. And Jesus, I'll just say about that, verse 22, Jesus said, "Be of good cheer, daughter, your faith has made you well." And the woman was made well from that hour. And this was in the middle of him going to a house to heal or to raise a daughter from the dead, a girl from the dead. Something else that I saw today, I'm not going to say I never saw it before, but it just didn't really click with me. Verse 23, this is not about faith, but it says, "When Jesus came to the ruler's house, he saw the flute players and the noisy crowd wailing." Can you imagine that? Flute players and people wailing. I guess that's their way of grieving, I guess. But anyhow. Okay. Let's talk about Peter for a little bit. We know Peter had great faith, and Peter, it seems to me that Peter is maligned quite a bit today because of we read of his failures, but Peter was probably... I don't know if I should say Peter was one of the strongest disciples. That's probably not... I probably shouldn't say that because we just don't know a lot about some of the disciples at all. But we hear a lot about Peter, and we know he was one of the leaders of the disciples, of the apostles, because of the way he's referenced in the Scriptures. And he is the one that jumped out on the water. Matthew 14 and 22. This is another time when they were out on the sea. The disciples were, and here Jesus, Jesus came walking to them on the water, and the disciples were in the boat, verse 24, and a lot of wind, and they thought it was a ghost. And Jesus says, verse 27, "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." Peter says, "Lord, if it's you, he wanted proof, didn't he? "Lord, if it's you, have me come to you." So Jesus said, "Come." Well, Peter displayed great faith then, didn't he? Which of us would jump out of a boat in big waves, believing that we could actually do something that no human being had ever done before? Well, Peter did. And he made it for a ways, and then his faith wavered. And so Jesus caught him and says, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Well, why did he doubt? Wasn't it because he looked around? He didn't, the little song that we sing, he took his eyes off Christ, he took his eyes off where he was going, and he started looking around. And for us today, we're looking around and we see sin, and we see pleasures of the world, and we don't see God, then we sink. So, Peter was a very good example of what, we can all understand that. In the Garden of Gethsemane, he pulled his sword. John's the only one that records his name as doing that. But he pulled his sword and cut off the high priest's servant's ear to try to defend Christ. He said, "I'll defend you to death. They're not going to take you." Well, he must have, he was ready, because they surely didn't carry a sword all the time, did they? He had a sword then, though. He was ready to fight to the death. I think that's a lot of faith. And he started to use it, and Christ stopped him. And so then, as they proceeded to Caiaphas and to the courtyard, all of them ran off except for him, and I believe it was John. We're not specifically told it was John, but the way John records it, it surely was. And the two of them followed the band, the mob that had Christ, and to the courtyard. And then, of course, Peter denied. But John, if you look at John 18, 15 and 16, they went in the courtyard. I guess it was an outdoor courtyard of some type, and probably had a gate, and Peter stopped. John went on in, but John knew the high priest. And I'm assuming here that it's John. And John went back to the door and opened the door for Peter so he could come in. Probably encouraged him to come in. John 18. If you're reading that, you'll see, verse 15 and 16. But Peter stood at the door outside. Then the other disciple, who was known to the high priest, John, I think, went out and spoke to her who kept the door and brought Peter in. Then Peter was recognized and he denied. Apparently, John doesn't say anything about it, but I would think that John was recognized also. He knew the high priest. They had to know he was following Christ. He was there with him right then. But John was humble and did not write in that manner. He didn't say, "I knew him." He didn't record for himself that way. So it appears to me that John's faith was greater than Peter's at this moment. And that's something about faith, isn't it? It can go up, it can go down. We can be strong, we can be weak. But we need to keep building and keep growing and making it stronger, even though we might have a setback once in a while.
That's typical today, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Some people are more impetuous like Peter.
Yeah.
It's just up and down, And then some are just as level.
Yep. And, I think that's a good case for saying that, just because, because personalities are different doesn't really mean that one is better. Obviously, if a person's not following God, that's not good. But, if you have a person like Peter and you have a person like John, they were both apostles. They were both martyrs for Christ. They both died for Christ. They both established the church. But they were very different people in personality. And then Peter made the great confession in Matthew 16, verses 13-16, when Christ asked the disciples, verse 13, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And they said, "Well, some say John the Baptist, Elijah, or Jeremiah. But who do you say that I am?" And Simon Peter spoke up. He says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." He didn't have any question then, did he? He made a statement. And verse 18, he says, "I'll build my church on that statement." Those who make that statement can be in my church. That's why we ask someone, before they are immersed in baptism, waters of baptism, "Do you believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God?" Okay. Any thoughts on that before we move on? We've got to keep moving here. So Christ at least twice that I found, likened faith to a grain of mustard seed, Matthew 17 and 20. He says, "If you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to this mountain, 'Move from here and to there,' and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you." This was about where the disciples could not cast an evil spirit out of a child. We'll talk about that in just a second here. Next, actually. But the thing I wanted to say about the mustard seed, if you look at it, if you've seen one, or you can pull up a picture on the internet, they're very tiny. Maybe about like a head of a pin, maybe a little bit bigger than that. That's about how big they are. But yet they grow into a tree. Not a big tree, but a tree. Well, what's that say about faith? What have we been saying about faith? It's about growing. It's about starting little and growing. The increase is huge, is one of the things we could look at. You know, you see some of these animals when they're born, they're very tiny, and yet they may grow to hundreds of pounds. Well, that's how faith is. Luke 17, I think, is the other example where he talks about the mustard seed. Yeah. He says, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you can say to this mulberry tree, be pulled up by the roots and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. They must have been standing by a mulberry tree when he said that. So then I wanted to spend just a little bit of time. We've got about 5 minutes here or so. Mark 9:14-29 is the same incident as Matthew 17. We just talked about where this man brought his son to Christ because his son, one account says he was an epileptic. He had a demon. Hold on here, I'll get to it. And in beginning in verse 14, well, I'm sorry, verse 17, this man says to Christ, Teacher, I brought you my son who has a mute spirit. He couldn't talk, or at least on occasions he couldn't talk, which would be in line with being an epileptic. I think that is the words used in Matthew. Wherever it seizes him, it throws him down. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. That's an epileptic seizure. So I spoke to your disciples. They could not cast it out, that they should cast it out, but they could not. And so, verse 20, it happens right then. They brought this boy to Christ, and when he saw him, when the boy saw Christ, or when the Spirit in the boy saw Christ, says it immediately the Spirit convulsed him and he fell on the ground and wallowed foaming at the mouth. So Christ said to the man, how long has this been happening? From childhood. Here's the important thing in verse 22. The man says, but if you can do anything, if you can do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Well, what about his faith? It wasn't really strong, was it? Apparently he had some. He brought him to the disciples. But then when they couldn't cast it out, I wonder what happened to his faith then. Probably started losing faith, didn't he? So he says to Christ, if you can do anything, Jesus says then, if you can believe, all things are possible to him who believes. And then he makes that great statement in the next verse. Says, immediately he cried out with tears, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. So that's, can't we all identify with that statement? So Christ says, deaf and dumb spirit, I command you come out of him and enter him no more. And so he did. They thought the boy was dead, but Jesus lifted him up and he was alive and well. And here's something I want you maybe to think about for next week or whenever. I don't have any clue to the answer to this. The disciples said to Christ, how come we couldn't cast him out? So he said to them, this kind can come out by nothing but prayer and fasting. They had power over spirits, but not this kind. So are there degrees? Apparently there are, aren't there? Interesting to think about, but it also tells us that the disciples here, I don't know if this had to do with their lack of faith or if it had to do maybe more with the lack of knowledge about how to cast the spirit out, because Christ says prayer and fasting is necessary.
It wasn't until later also that they received the Holy Spirit.
Right, but he had given them power before.
But I guess just with the Holy Spirit they would have had more power.
Yeah. Okay.
Prior to that, up there in verse 19, he says, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you?
how long shall I bear with you? Bring him to me.
Yeah.
So he does kind of rebuke him in a way for having too little faith.
Okay, and then our...
That also shows the power of fasting.
Oh, yeah.
I think that said you need to get, you know, have more of a sharpness or an attention to the Spirit. Or to fasting will help us concentrate on
it. Yeah. And then we all know James talks a lot about faith in the second chapter, the brother of Jesus here. And we don't have time to read through all this, but basically faith without works is dead. And you can have belief, but you can't have faith unless you actually put it into action. If you actually do it, then that's faith, whatever it is you're talking about. There's verse 19. You believe there's one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. So, if we don't take action, it certainly doesn't complete it. And then, we see in Revelations when Christ told John to write to the seven churches of Asia, he talked to Smyrna. He says, you're about to be persecuted greatly. Some of you are going to be thrown in prison. Some of you are going to be put to death. But be faithful unto death, and I will give you a crown of life. And I have a talk I've given about that, about the difference in faith and being faithful. The faith is the act of being faithful and continuing to believe and continuing to work. That's the act of being faithful. So, when we think about faith, I guess the message I want to leave this morning, we need to be also thinking about increasing our faith and what to do if it's weak, if we have a downtime. How do we build back up through the Word of God and through our association with one another? Okay, we'll close for this morning. Thanks for your comments. And I don't remember what's next on the list, so...